There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people to see if we could become something more. So when they needed us, we could fight the battles
that they never could.
To Infinity War and beyond.
This is the Infinity Warm-Up. And starting off the journey to Avengers Infinity War, we thought it would be fun to go back and revisit each one of the films from the very beginning with a brief mini-episode of the show. And so we are starting this week with Iron Man, the original film, May 2nd, 2008. Now, that is nearly 10 years ago. It'll be 10 years ago by the time Infinity War comes around, but this is the film that started it all. Today we have Daniel, Sean, Rob here to talk about the film with us. Guys, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has sort of taken over the movie theater in the last few years. Are you fans of the films? Are these things that you actually are excited about when a new one comes about?
Personally, most of the time I am. I do like Marvel in general, but there's usually some movies that I'm not as interested in. But for the most part, I'm usually pretty excited when a new one comes out.
Normally, I'm not like going towards Marvel, because, I don't know, I don't really like Marvel.
Yikes.
We're kicking off this podcast right with Sean, who doesn't like Marvel.
You must love DC, don't you?
I don't watch, like, yeah.
It's amazing to me that for you two specifically, like, Sean, you're what, 14?
13.
When this movie came out, you were, like, 4 years old. Yeah. Yeah, so you saw it in the theater.
No.
Yeah.
Had you guys seen Iron Man before this?
I have not seen the original Iron Man before this.
Nope.
I've seen this about 15 times.
I think you and I saw it in the theater, actually, when it came out. I think you and I saw it together.
Yeah.
But you guys are familiar with the character of Iron Man, especially at this point, because Robert Downey Jr. has carried this ball for 6 or 7 movies at this point.
Yeah.
You hadn't seen this particular movie, but you knew the character. So was he different to you in this movie than the way you've seen him?
A bit, yeah. He was, I guess, he didn't seem as, like, full of himself in this movie as others.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he didn't seem as, like, full of himself as he usually is. And with, like, the last Avengers movie and Captain America Civil War, he also didn't seem as, like, you know, angry and, like, I guess not as, like, kind of full of, like, life in those ones. He seemed kind of like he was just starting to get, like, used to it, almost. Like, he obviously had the, like, arc reactor put into him to save his life, so it's an origin story for Iron Man and...
Yeah, it sort of sets a template for what was to come. So many of the Marvel movies end up using the same formula in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Ant-Man uses it. Doctor Strange uses it. I'm sure there are others. Sean, what about you?
For me, like, when I think of Iron Man, I think of, like, the robot, right? So, like what the armor is. So, it, like, when you see it, if you haven't seen the movie, it kind of looks like a robot. And, like, but in this, it's, like, it shows you how he, like, made it, so it shows him as, like, more of a person.
Now, did you know he was a man and not just...
Yeah,
made
I
it?
knew that.
What did the character seem different to you? Like you said, you see him more as a person. What do you mean?
Like, you see how he made it, so, like, you see that he's, like, trying and, like, trial and error, and, like...
Oh, okay.
Robert Downey Jr.'s, I grew up watching his movies and everything, and he's great now in Iron Man. He's basically himself.
He's not acting, actually. They just followed him around with a camera for a week of his life.
I'd be surprised if he wasn't acting.
This was the movie sort of that put Robert Downey Jr. back on the map after this one, because he'd fallen out of Hollywood for a long time.
Yeah, this was his, like, coming out again.
it's a lot of fun. This movie's, I still think this is one of the best, like, definitely top three that we've seen. And there's been 22, I think, by the time Infinity War comes around. What are some of the threads that you saw in this particular movie that sort of set up the rest of what you guys were more familiar with? What are some of the things that you saw?
The terrorist group, the Ten Rings.
That's, oh, right.
Like, in Mandarin. And yeah, this was literally the beginning of the whole mentioning of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Nick Fury.
Hmm.
Yeah, introducing, like,
Coulson?
No.
Well, there's only two that they mention. It's Nick Fury and Coulson.
No, who plays Nick Fury?
Oh, Samuel L.
Jackson. Oh, Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Samuel Jackson coming out as Nick Fury because this was, like, the first time there was, like, a sort of, like, Nick Fury in most of the Marvel movies. Even in the past, too.
It's funny because this movie feels like it's sort of its own thing. It still feels like it's one story. Like, they set out to make a Iron Man story as opposed to set up the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's introducing the universe, basically. Like, because I know with, what was it, with the Dark Universe, with the Mummy and stuff, Universal, they tried doing that and it sort of flopped. But
it's because it was a terrible movie. That's why. One of the things I noticed watching it again for the first time in a long time is this one actually seems a lot more serious than the Marvel movies have become now. It seems a lot more focused, and it's very, like, it's actually pretty dramatic for parts of it. You know, like, Robert Downey Jr. is pretty intent on this role. And this sort of sets him up. He was sort of the guy in the Marvel universe for a long time. He still sort of is, but he's not as, I don't know, is he as big as he used to be? He hasn't had an Iron Man movie in 5 years, but he's had many Iron Man appearances.
The presence of him still is, like, big, I guess.
It's true. You know, a question for you guys here. One of the big things that happens in this particular movie, you know, when Pepper gives him a gift, and it says that this is proof that Tony Stark has a heart. So I was wondering what you guys think about the use of the heart. What does it mean for Tony Stark to have a heart in this particular movie?
In this movie, I think for Tony, it really just means, like, being alive.
Mm.
As we seen, he had gotten, like, shrapnel in some of his, like, arteries, and they were leading up. They were going towards his heart, which would have killed him, and he got the, like, at first, like, the part of the car battery put in, and then eventually the arc reactor put in to stop the shrapnel from entering his heart. So I think, like, it's really only just life that it represents.
Mm.
There isn't much of, like a romance in this movie. There's some stuff that's hinted, but it's not, like, it's a second plot line. So I think, really, it's just being able to live is what the heart represents in this movie.
Hmm. Okay. Sean, what do you think?
Well, the, like, arc reactor thing, it was, like, the whole main part of the suit. So without it, it wouldn't, like, do anything.
Hmm.
So, like, it means that, like, to show that that's what keeps you alive.
I think
that.
No, it's really a second chance, or like a new beginning, because before his whole chest exploding, he was just being wealthy, going out, like, doing stuff, like, dating girls, and just spreading the wealth around, not caring how he makes it or whatever, until he gets kidnapped and put in a cave and has to literally, like, fight his way out, and finding out how his weapons that he was so proud of is causing so much trouble and damage around the world, or, like, overseas and stuff, that he gets a whole change of mind and starts becoming, you know, yeah. He grows up, basically. Yeah.
How does he change? You talk about a second chance. How is he different after the experience?
He, like, cares more about, like, people, I guess, because he, like, doesn't want the weapons, like, being used, because he knows what it feels like, so he starts putting himself in other people's shoes.
I can
say definitely he kind of became more, I guess,
mature,
understanding and mature. As we seen after he got back from Afghanistan, he, in a press conference, he said that Stark Industries will no longer be, like, dealing with weapons, because he had seen that it was just causing so much destruction and killing innocent people. So I think he finally, like, realized that what Stark Industries, like, is doing, like, is wrong, and it seems like he wants to make it into, like, a good company, a good industry. I think he becomes more mature.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that, you know, he's selling weapons to the good guys and the bad guys, if you will, to put it not too fine a point on it. And even in this particular film, that sort of blurs the lines of who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. It's a drastic change. It's a drastic change. And when he comes back, you know, the first thing he says to Pepper, I want an American cheeseburger. And he said, and I want to. And she goes, oh, Tony, you don't. And she goes, no, not that. And you know that the hint is sort of that he wants a woman. It's sort of the indicate, you know, something else I want to do is I want to have sex, or I want to go, you know. It's okay, Daniel. It's a word. It's a word. But this, you know, this sort of womanizing was part of who he is. But even that sort of changed. He's just sort of got this new outlook on human life. I think it was James Harlemond, who's been a friend of our regular podcast, and he pointed out, I loved his analysis. He actually looks at Tony Stark as the first disciple, not like literally, but when you look at his journey, what you have is a guy there who's completely thinking of himself until somebody else who sacrifices his life for him literally gives him a new heart. And that new heart actually changes the way that he sees everything. And the people all around him, he's totally changed. And the people around him doubt it, because they keep saying to him, they say to him things like, you know, you just need some rest. We'll get back to the old Tony. I'm sure it'll be fine. And he says, no, it has to be different from now on. But that's a pretty significant shift. I mean, to have a new heart for Tony actually changes the way he sees the world. And it's a much bigger view of understanding his role in the world. I think it's sort of almost like he talks about it like he has more purpose now than he did before.
Yeah, like you don't know how good you have it until you lose something.
What
sort
do you mean?
Like he lost his heart. Like he couldn't survive. And like then just seeing everything happening in Afghanistan, like seeing them losing, seeing terrorists shoot the families and taking away things of theirs, like there's something there.
Why don't you talk to me a little bit about Obadiah? They sort of set him up as an older version of Tony's father figure, if you will. He killed off his father when he was young. And the two men sort of, especially the beginning, seem to be very similar. What is it about Obadiah that you think sort of gets him motivated and keeps him going?
I think maybe the fact that he's kind of been with Stark Industries longer. He worked with, at least I think he worked with Tony's father. So he was there from the beginning, like he learned the ropes. And so probably seeing all of this, like, change in Stark Industries, he probably just doesn't like it, and he knows that it's not going to be, like, as powerful and as, like, rich as it was. So I think kind of what sets him apart and what sets him up to be, like, a villain is that he wants it to be, like, the original Stark Industries. He wants it to be, like, this weapon-making industry, and Tony now doesn't want it to be that, so he's just trying to get it back to what it was, get that power. He probably wants to, like, own it, like, kind of have Tony's job, and the money. There's probably a lot of that.
That's a good idea. Well, you mentioned the idea of power. What do you think power looks like in a movie like this?
Being on the top seat. Yeah.
Top seat of what?
Of everything. Of, like, how, like, Obadiah wants to be, like, the CEO of Stark Industries. There's nothing else in his way to getting the top seat of the company. And with that, he has massive power over all the weapons, everything that Stark Industries has.
I think, like, after the dad died, he thought that he was going to get the promotion to be, like, the CEO, and then the son came and got everything that... So he was, like, greedy, and he wanted, like, everything, and he wanted the money and all that.
He wants, like, the top spot. He wants, like, the throne of Stark Industries. As we see at, like, the beginning of the movie, it's showing Tony on, like, a bunch of, like, magazine and, like, news articles, just showing, like, you know, he's, like, the super rich guy, he's, you know, the leader of, like, this major company and everything, and I think, like, jealousy probably plays a major part, because, like, as Sean said, he probably wanted that job right after Tony's father died, and he expected to get that job, and then when Tony comes up, he's like, hey, I want that. You know, they gave it to him. So I think he's really jealous of what he probably felt he should have gotten.
I think he was more jealous about what Tony could do and his ideas, because the whole thing about trying to build the arc reactor small enough that he can use it and getting frustrated that he can't have what Tony has.
I wonder what this movie would look like if it were made today. I was wondering that as I was watching it, because 10 years ago was a very different time than it is right now.
Yeah.
I think Obama had been in office for like 3 months by the time this movie came out, so it was written at a very different time. But, you know, when I'm thinking of the idea of power for him, to me the idea of power, it comes down to sort of control.
Yeah.
You know, but not just being number one and at Stark. It seemed like controlling so many different elements. Almost like that's a global puppet, right?
That's what he kind of did with with Stark Industries, because he was literally dealing with U.S. military and terrorist military, like selling both sides, everything. So, but he just comes out on top, regardless.
Yeah, and that's an interesting contrast with Tony. It's no wonder that there's such a split between the two of them, because Tony, as soon as he comes back, is trying to give that up. He's trying to get rid of that power. He's not trying to get rid of the company. He wants the company to be successful. He wants it to be successful, but he wants it to be successful for the right reasons. So that idea of control, he's actually trying to give up. It seems that way. So it's no wonder that would offset what...
You know, the person that had that much power for a good while, losing, getting that cut off, he's going to want to do something to get back that power, hence kidnapping Tony and, yeah.
He doesn't even kidnap Tony. He comes up behind him and puts a little red light to his ear, and then Tony doesn't move. Or
like, takes the stuff and, yeah, just leaves him for dead. Like, sits with him for a while, and you, like...
makes a little speech as he rips his heart out, and just leaves. Let me tell you a little bit about my diabolical plan. What is it they talked about in The Incredibles? Remember The Incredibles? You caught me monologuing and all that?
Oh, yeah.
He totally monologues. Well, now that you're stuck there. I think one of the funniest lines to me is he goes, ever since I had you kidnapped, and the music goes, bum, bum. And I'm like, they just said that in the last scene. We all know that now. It was funny.
Gwyneth Paltrow's acting was not the best.
She's an Oscar winner, man.
Well.
So is Jeff Bridges,
was
though.
Was it for this movie?
No, it was not. It was not. It is funny to see a young Agent Coulson before he ended up on a horrible TV show. That was... You're young and reckless, that's why.
They're there.
They're there, Sean. Oh, youth. The thing about that show that always made me laugh is they were like, don't worry, it ties to the movies. And they never had any of the stars on. It's like, hey, Thor was here last week, and he left this thing. And it was a thing from the movie. And now we've got this thing from Thor. But... oh, you just missed him. It was kind of like Pokeroo back in the day. It was like, oh, my gosh. Captain America just left. He was here. You just missed him by 10 minutes. It was just here, I swear. I think Nick Fury is the only one they could afford.
I was going to say, just with the Iron Man series, is actually, like, I was trying to think, because with all the other Marvel movies, it's literally all the bad guys are just... either supernatural or space-ridden villains. But, yeah, these ones are literally just humans.
Yeah, they're terrorists. I was thinking that when we were watching it. The movie's very small in a lot of ways.
Terrorists or people wanting to get revenge, mainly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Because now they've got magic and they've got... you know, aliens and all this stuff. And at this point, it was just a dude, a rich dude with a metal suit flying around taking down terrorists. Did this movie strike you as really different from the ones you guys are seeing now? Or no?
Yes.
Sean. Sean. Sean is regretting being on this podcast right now. Daniel?
I think it definitely is. Earlier, Steve, you said that you found that it was a lot more serious than what we see now. And I think that's really true. I feel like they add a lot of, like, comedic aspects to, like, Marvel movies nowadays, especially, like, the Avengers movies, which, like, I find, like, you know, it's nice to add a little bit, like, now and then, but I feel like they're starting to put too much to where it's, like, every second line is, like, you know, a witty remark from, like, Tony or, you know, Cap saying something funny. Like, it's... I feel like it's kind of taking away from, like, the whole... like, these are superheroes. Like, it's focusing on them. Sometimes in, like, their off time.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is... it's funny, so it's... I keep seeing them. I keep going and watching them, so they're obviously doing something right. But I feel like this movie, it was, you know, very serious. But they were able to add some, like, you know...
There's humor in it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not, you know, Thor Ragnarok, bum joke, you know, like, yeah. All this, like, wackiness. That kind of bugs me. I admit, like, it kind of bugs me because it's like, what do you expect from a movie at all, right? Like, now, like, superhero movies, there's so many of them, they have to, like, people are just, like, they're silly as it is, so just make them comedies, it feels like. Now, I could be wrong. And Infinity War is probably going to be... it's playing itself as much more serious and, you know, people are going to die and all this stuff. But this one felt... this one I like so much because it tells you a really good story and he's funny in parts, but it's not like...
comedic funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like joke, you know? It felt like it's coming from more from his personality than coming, like, to try and keep you entertained.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why I think... that's why this is one of my favorites, to be honest, is it really tries hard to give you a good story. And the fact that he's not going up into space and all that stuff yet, it's nice. Like, it feels...
Yeah. He tried.
He tried. Actually, Jarvis says that at one point. Jarvis says, if you want to go into space, we'll have to change these things. And I'd never caught that before. So thank you guys for being on as we continue our Infinity warm-up. And next week, we will be back with The Incredible Hulk.
Woo.
Woo indeed. Ed Norton's also all-too-brief appearance in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's the one we don't talk about.
Just like Rhodey. We didn't talk about Rhodey. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Bye, Terrence Howard. I laugh so hard now at that one scene where he goes, next time, baby, because I'm like, dude, you're not... there's no next time for you. That's... But we will be back with The Incredible Hulk, starring Ed Norton.
We will continue to speak to Infinity War and maybe beyond.